Welcome to School for Startups Radio. We don't have time for the normal introduction and all of that. We have to jump into it because the show is that busy today. First up, we have Simone Serevino, who's going to tell us how to make $2 billion extra dollars. It's an amazing... I'll stop because the introduction is very soon. And then after that, we have from the archives... And it's a really messed up interview. I'm sorry. I'll explain it in a minute. But I'm not going to tell you the name now, because if I did, you would laugh and think I was teasing and lying to you. His first name is Ben. He used to hang out with Zig Ziglar. And here's the show. What if you could get $2 billion in additional sales or 14 extra hours per week? Our first guest today makes that happen. Please welcome Simone Serevino to the show. He has created $2 billion extra dollars for his clients. He has gotten them 14 extra hours per week using his strategy sprints method, and sales will soar. He is also author of a book called Strategy Sprints over on that Amazon place. It is five-star rated with almost 40 five-star reviews. Very impressive. The book is... Strategy Sprints, 12 Ways to Accelerate Growth for an Agile Business. Simon, welcome. How are you?
Hello, Jim. Thanks for having me. Hello, everyone.
It is my pleasure. All right. So congratulations on the success and the book as well. Why don't you start with telling us about the 14 hours? Let's jump in there. I want 14 hours.
So many of us right now feel like, oh my God, I have so many tasks on my desk. If that is the case, this is what I do when I feel like it's too much. I don't have the energy to do it all. I'm hitting a wall. What I do is I make a list of all the things that are on my desk right now. It's usually a list of 100 things that I have to do. Call back that person, move forward that project, do this for the school of my kids. List of 100 things. I cut those to-dos in half. And then I cut them in half again. And I cut them in half again until I have the top 4 activities.
Okay.
Now you have 4 things in front of you.
Still have to get done?
Probably. But first, we might cut them, we might delegate, we might organize them to a better time.
Okay.
So we have now a little bit more wiggle room, breathing room. Right? The top 4 I will do immediately. I have my top 4 in front of me right now, my top 4 today. And I have a little calendar where I track them. So a little helper for my coaching clients. Right now in front of me, I have to move forward one baby step towards my book that I'm writing right now together with Jay Abraham. I have to make 3 introductions every day to 2 people who need to know each other, but don't know each other. Those are 2 examples of 2 tasks that I have in front of me. And by doing that, I'm reducing the amount of time that I work, but I'm having a ton of impact because I am focusing on the highest leverage activities that I can do.
So, Simon, I see the increased productivity, I see efficiency, but I still don't understand how the hours change, because you know you've got it organized now, but that first project still takes 2 hours. No matter when you do it, how you do it, it's going to take you 2 hours, right? So why does having such a clear order make the time change? Does that make sense?
Because when you don't prioritize, now you are doing 17 little tasks per day. But with this method, the first 2 hours, I'm doing the book. That book is with Jay Abraham. When we launch the book, it comes with a program. So it's a whale task. It's not a tuna. It's a whale task. When that book is done, it will make $6 million in revenue for Jay and me, for the 2 authors, because it comes with a program and with a launch campaign and with an intro by Tony Robbins. So we're talking whale task. Now, if I don't do that, it might be just one of the 17 tasks that I have, like calling back the school of my kids because they need a new lunchbox. Those things are not the same leverage. And so this exercise helps me go back hey, wait a moment, of these 17 things, which one is the highest impact activity? And then later on, when I've done the first one, I might still get back to the school task, but it's at a time in the day where I don't need my 100% energy and attention.
Yes, I agree with that. Give the children the time when we're really sleepy and don't have our attention around us.
No, it's just an email from school telling you to change the lunchbox.
Right, that's not important. You know, I have 4 children, Simon, and they spread out over 3 decades. So at this point, I've just washed my hands of them, you know? how many children do you have?
3.
Yes. So, I've stopped parenting. My oldest one is 30. So I'm done. All right. Back to the book. All right. So is there more to it than that? What else, or what's the next point or step?
Well, the second step is then, okay, what with all these other tasks? Now, all these other tasks, you can decide if you can cut them, simplify them, or delegate them. You can delegate them to a software or to a person. Nowadays, there's great software that can do a ton of tasks. Like today, I even used software to do 2 of my bigger tasks. One of the bigger tasks is every day making those 3 introductions. And I asked the software, because it has my emails and it has my calendar, and I said, who are 2 people based on my emails and on my meetings that I had over the last weeks, who are 2 people who don't know each other but would benefit greatly from getting to know each other? And it did a great job pulling them out. And then I said, can you draft an email introducing them to each other with the reason why it did it? Can you insert it into my inbox as a draft and pull already their email addresses? It did it. And so I was just talking to it, but I had a send-ready email draft after a few minutes. So that's a godsend.
That is what, you know, so for a while it sounded like you were talking about ChatGPT. And then I know ChatGPT can't do all of that email stuff.
No. It's a simple software with some AI in it. It's called Fixer AI.
Fixer, F-I-X-E-R?
F-Y-X-E-R.
Okay, AI.
Yeah. And so the first task was it made those introductions, yep. And that's a godsend in itself.
Oh, yeah. I love what you're doing. Just it's nice of you to introduce people, but it can take 30 minutes to do that task.
Yeah, it usually took me 60 minutes to do it manually. Now it takes me 2 minutes to do it. The second thing is I also ask it, hey, go back through my calendar. Who were people who almost became my one-on-one client, but for different reasons, they didn't buy? Who are they? Can you resurface them? Can you refine their email address? Can you draft a reconnect email? Hey, how are you doing? I'm curious. What happened since the last time we talked? And it did that too. And we sent those emails. And if you're an entrepreneur, you know that that's a very important task. Reconnect to the so-called close lost deals.
Right, yes.
Because they might need you now, or they might know somebody who needs your services now.
Yes.
It's a great activity. Again, it can take a ton of time, and I used to forget everybody. But now with this software, I remember, it creates an email draft, and boom, I send it.
That is a good smart one there. I like that. I just pulled up the website. That's the coolest thing that I've seen in a long time, because that's exactly all the problems I have. And it works for Gmail and Outlook, and I'm an Outlook person, so I'm excited for this. You know, I asked ChatGPT, can you do this, you know, actual file functions? And it said no. And that's the...
Not yet.
Yeah. When GPT can do Fixer AI and combine all of that, then the movie comes true and we all die as human beings. So let's just digress, Simon, for just a second. What are your thoughts or concerns with AI? Is obviously it's the coolest thing ever. We all love it. Does it have an evil downside where we all go, oops, missed that?
Well, there is the big trust issue, and there is the issue, do we use it to make things better or worse? So let's go with better or worse. There are some tasks that I don't give to AI. One is content creation, the other one is deciding. So those two tasks, I have decided that I will never give those two tasks to an AI because it wouldn't make a better job than I am doing, and so I wouldn't. So the first thing is whatever you are thinking to give to AI right now, think twice. Will it really do a better job? Will it be more empathic, more human, more valuable if AI does it? Think twice before you do that. The second thing is the trust aspect. Do you really trust that team to handle your data carefully? I do not trust all the teams to handle my data carefully. You mentioned the product that I don't trust. I don't trust that product. I don't trust that team. I don't trust that CEO and founder. I stay away from it.
You're talking about Bill Gates and Microsoft and Outlook?
OpenAI. I don't trust the OpenAI team, okay, so I don't use ChatGPT.
Yeah. What would you replace it with?
I trust the Anthropic team, so I mainly use Claude.
Spell that, please.
And for this, Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E.
Okay, yep.
Claude is like ChatGPT, very similar. And I use that mainly for research. And then for specific tasks, I have specific software. Like for being my executive assistant, I use Fixer AI.
All right.
So my second question would be to the listeners. Do you really trust the team that you're giving your data to handle that data carefully? Do they have high ethical standards? Are these people that you trust before you make that decision? Because I'm giving them my Gmail data, my calendar data. That's very personal data. And so I need to trust them.
I think Sean Altman, the guy there? He seems like a crazy person to me.
Absolutely. I wouldn't trust him with a single dollar.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Absolutely interesting. What about visual AI, visual product creation? Do you have any suggestions there?
I don't really do much with visuals. Right. I have Midjourney. Midjourney is helpful, but I'm not in a very visual business.
Right, yeah. All right, back to the book, 12 Ways to Accelerate Growth. Oh, we haven't talked about the main keyword yet, the sprints. Tell us about your new trademarked sprints.
Yeah, so I was working for the big advisory houses, the big management consulting houses of this world, and I was frustrated with how we executed and how we delivered some projects. So I went on my own and tried a better way of doing that. The better way was more like their life is and more integrated into their life. So you say you have four kids. When you have four kids and you have a business coach, you don't want that business coach to interrupt your day. You are in such a time crunch. The ideal business coach would be somebody like Jarvis for Iron Man. Like he's on your phone and you just talk to it, right? Whenever you need it. So you're doing your thing and now you have a question. My email subject line, should I make it this or that? Now you want to quickly ask your business coach. And so the strategy sprint is a way of coaching people because we're business coaches. We help entrepreneurs optimize their marketing, sales, positioning, messaging. And so we created something that's on your phone. It's like Jarvis to Iron Man. You just talk to it and you say, hey, Simon, I need help right now. This is where I'm stuck. I don't know how to recruit affiliates or my first affiliate marketing program. I've never done affiliate marketing. Can you help me? Simon, my YouTube sucks. Nobody's watching it. Nobody's subscribing. How do I improve my content? So you ask the question in the moment when you have the question, and I quickly answer it on your phone. And that became the Strategy Sprints method. Every Monday, we help you have your focus for the week. Every Friday, we learn from the week. And in between, you have 24/7 access to me, like Iron Man has Jarvis. So I'm now the Jarvis to entrepreneurs. And this became the Strategy Sprint. In the book, Strategy Sprints, we describe the method, how we define the focus each Monday, how do we learn from the week each Friday, and what to do in between during the week to optimize marketing, sales, and client work.
You said that that's an app?
Yeah.
What's it called?
It works on every phone, and then, yeah.
What's the app called?
It's called Strategy Sprints.
And we can just get it at the App Store?
Yes, obviously. On any App Store. Yeah.
And it's like ChatGPT, but built into a more strategy-focused AI. Am I correct?
It's actually me. It's a direct way to talk to me and my team. Yeah, it's like a private Facebook, and you can talk to the CEO of Facebook. Okay. So it's really our own. It's 230 people in there. And you can talk to me directly, and you can say, Simon, this is the sales problem that I'm facing. This is where I am. Help me. And then we take it with you in quick iterations.
Fantastic. And what's the cost for that? Give me the background. That kind of snuck up on me. That's not in the materials that I was sent, or I didn't discover that in my research on you. So give us the whole lowdown on that part of your business.
Sure. There is a vehicle for every budget and for every team size. So if you're a solopreneur, there is a $49 per month package, and we can help you. If you are a small team, there is a $900 per month package. And if you're a bigger team or you want one-on-one work, that's a $9,000 per month package. So each team can find their vehicle that works best for their current cash flow. But all the three formats, they help have 24/7 access to me. And whenever you're stuck in sales and marketing, you can ask, I will answer, and we move it forward from there. We have developed 274 tools. So you might say, Simon, but if somebody's paying $49 per month, how can you help them? I mean, it's not worth it for you, right, spending that time. But it is, because I have saved all these blueprints in 22 years of coaching people. I have saved the blueprints. So we now have 274 blueprints and tools plug and play ready. So when somebody asks me something in our app, I can quickly point them to the tool, and then they can move on quickly. And I can make them a little video and a 3 minutes explainer of how they use it. And I can give them feedback. They share a screenshot of how they are using it. And I can say, oh, you're using it wrong. Try this. So I found a way, very time effective, to still help all people in our community independently of which tier they chose.
Well, let's get an example, can we? For example, you threw out YouTube. My channel's not growing fast enough. What would the response to that look like?
Yes. So today in the app, I had three questions around that. One was, Simon, the people are watching it, but I am not converting them into anything monetary. So they're watching it, but I have the feeling that I'm giving away my wisdom and my knowledge, and nothing happens. So what I did is, okay, share a screenshot of the description to each video. They share the screenshot. So 1 minute later, I had the screenshot. I looked at it and I said, look at the first sentence of your description. So below the video, you always have the first sentence of the description of the video. And that first sentence is above the fold. So right. That's the most important call to action. the call to action there was weak. It was sign up for our newsletter. Now that's a weak call to action because nobody wants to sign up for a newsletter. They are there because they want to solve a problem. Right? So again, I write them in the app. I said, do you have a tool, a PDF, something small and helpful that can actually solve the problem that you are talking about in the video? And they go, oh yeah, I have it. Okay, make the call to action, download this specific tool that you saw me using in the video so that you can solve your problem. And so they changed that. It was an hour ago. So I guess during even this week, we will see better results on that conversion. Because now the video was talking about something that you can immediately download. That is a strong call to action. People will click that. It will convert higher than what he was doing before. Subscribe to my newsletter.
That is a cool, cool product, and I will check that out for sure. Let me ask you this. At what age did you realize you were different and going to be successful differently than your cohorts and friends and associates? And tell us that story when you realized you were, you know, just better than the rest of us.
I'm not better at most things still today. I'm 45 and I'm still mediocre at almost anything. I've never been the most athletic or the smartest in school, nor in my university. I managed to have great grades at university, but don't ask me why. I don't know how I did that. All three of my kids are smarter than I am, and they have higher IQ than I am. My journey was just learning who I am and what's my superpower. What can I contribute to other people? How can I create value? It took me forever. I didn't know it in my 20s. I found it in my 30s. And now I'm 45, and now I have clarity about that. How can I help people, and who am I here to serve? So you don't have to have any skills or anything where you are super talented, I think. If you ask yourself just one question, who am I here to serve? And then you really focus on these people and try to bring value, to solve problems for them and with them every day, and you just don't give up. So probably my only skill is endurance, because 22 years ago, I decided that I am here to serve entrepreneurs and to help them solve sales problems. And I have never given up since that day. So I stayed consistent. So I think my only skill is endurance. And when you found something that you're good at, just learn to not give up and to go deeper, to not get bored and start the next thing.
Great advice. I love it. Thank you. So let's talk about sales for just a second. What are the big mistakes that I'm making as a salesperson, and what do I do? What are the three biggest you see?
I see so many, because every day I'm getting sales recordings from the teams that we coach. The first one is they send the offer too early, or they say the price too early. Okay. So you are on a sales call, and then people say, "Babe, but what's the price?" And you know that you will get asked that question. But if they ask it very early, that means they're not really ready for the answer yet. There are 8 steps in a sales process. It's visualizing, frustration, importance, cost of inaction, deliverables, investment, starting date, statement of work. Those are the 8 steps. Investment, which is price, what are you going to invest? Time investment and monetary investment, that's the price questions, and it is step 6. But most of the time, you get asked it right in the first 5 minutes. If you get this question in the first 5 minutes, the right answer is not telling the price. The right answer is, we will talk about the investment of time and money in a second. Before that, can we go through 3 questions that I have for you? so that I understand better.
Love it.
So that I understand better. Yeah, so that I understand better where you are, where you want to go, and what's the obstacle in between, what's keeping you from just doing it right now. So that's the first step. The second is, okay, what have you tried? What else can you do? What are you looking at? Which options are you looking at? How many options do you have? Have you thought about doing nothing? What happens if you do nothing? Which competitors are you talking to? How far are you in that process? What is the main problem that you need to solve? How important is it from 1 to 10 that you solve it? And after all these things, now you get to the three deliverables, and now you are ready to make an offer. And here comes the second mistake. When they're ready to make an offer, many times, then you hear from the guy, okay, send me an offer, and I will think about it. The big mistake is to send an offer and to not schedule a meeting. The right thing is to immediately schedule a follow-up meeting and say, Jim, thanks for this question. I would love to walk you through an offer. Can we do it next Tuesday, 2 p.m.? And now you schedule a meeting with them and you walk them through the offer. Now you can send the offer before Tuesday, and I would do it, but I would do it as a DocuSign or PandaDoc, something that they can sign immediately. They won't sign it, but when they show up, now they are ready to buy. 30% will not even show up. And it's the right 30%. They have self-selected themselves out of the buying process, and it's fine. The other 70% that show up, they are ready to buy, and you should be able to close in that second call.
Great stuff, Simon. That was fantastic. 4 minutes. Could not be better. We need to wrap it up. How do we find out more about you, follow you online, get a copy of your book, all of that, please?
Yes, I'm Simon Severino. I hang out at strategysprint.com. The book is available on Amazon. It's called Strategy Sprint. And I'm on all socials. So wherever you Google Simon Severino, I will pop up.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And we'd love to have you back when you and Jay's book comes out. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks, everyone.
And we will be right back. We are back. And again, thank you so very much for being with us. Our next interview is all jacked up. As a matter of fact, it's only got one track, and that's mine. And so you can't hear any of my questions. But you know what? Maybe that'll be for the best. The guest is named, I'm not making this up, and he talks about it in the interview, Ben Gay III. And he was a contemporary of Zig Ziglar and was in sales contests with him. And I listened to the interview, and at no point will you have any trouble figuring out what the question is. You will automatically figure it out when you start to hear his answer. And I apologize. I know this is just messed up, but it's worth it. I promise you. It's really worth it. Ben is amazing. His stories are amazing. His advice is first level. And so we're going to do it. Enjoy Ben Gay III minus Jim.
Well, The Closers is the best-selling, most popular, most powerful series of books ever written on how to close sales and how to be a professional salesperson. The way they can do that is they can go to my website, bfg3.com. That's B as in Ben, F as in Frank, G as in Gay, the numeral 3.com. Little drop-down box will come down. Just give us your name and email, and we'll keep you up to date on what I'm doing. We won't try and sell you anything. And near the end, if anyone's interested in acquiring it, I've got a special place for them to go. You tell me when to announce that. Yeah, I had joined a multi-level marketing company, direct sales company called Holiday Magic Cosmetics. It was a little company when I joined. September 15, 1965, they ran a little ad in the paper and only two people responded. Zig Ziglar from Columbia, South Carolina. He was a cookware salesman. And me. So that, in a friendly way, sort of put us head to head, although we didn't know they were even going to have contests. And he got off to a quicker start than I did. He was 18 years older than I am or was. And but rather quickly, we got up to speed. And by the end of the year, we were sort of the dominant distributors nationwide in the company. Then they had a year-long contest. First prize was a mystery prize. Second was a Rolls Royce. Third was a Lincoln Continental. Fourth, I think, was a Thunderbird. And then it, yeah, after the mystery prize. Well, that's what I was sort of wondering, because when I won it, beating Zig, who got the Rolls, when I won it and was flown to California for the presentation, I asked William Penn Patrick, the owner of the company, I said, why is it a mystery prize? He said, well, you're now or about to be the president of the company. And it's a mystery prize because if somebody won it I didn't like, I'd have thrown in another Rolls Royce. So apparently he liked me. And on bad days, I used to call Zig, or if Zig and I happened to be talking, I'd say, Zig, here's the deal. I'll give you the keys to the front door, and you give me the keys to the Rolls Royce. And he'd say, no, no, you beat me fair and square. It really is. People have said, well, you know, you would have made it anyway. Well, maybe I would have. I think I would have been I was tops in mowing lawns when I was 14. Maybe I would have been tops in some. I often wonder. I often wonder how life would have been different had I not answered that little ad in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I don't know what the circulation of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution was in 1965, nor do I know what it is today. But let me just throw out a number and say 200,000 copies of that newspaper went out. And yeah, I think so. Probably when I moved to Atlanta with my family in 1948, the population of the metro area was 250,000 people. So things have changed a bit. But anyway, let's say 200,000 people had an opportunity to see that ad. A certain number, of course, never looked at the Warn ads, didn't look under business opportunities, et cetera. And of those who did, only two of us answered the ad, Zig and me. So I can still picture the phone booth outside, right where Peachtree and West Peachtree in Atlanta split. There used to be a when I was there that day, it was a Colonial grocery store. And I called from the phone booth right outside the Colonial store. I just called on him. I worked for my father as a food broker. Went into that phone booth, and it turned out the Holiday Magic local office was about two blocks from there. So when I began interviewing him, because I was Ben Gay, you know, early 20s, flat broke, flat top, and acne, left over from my teenage years. I got about five questions deep in my interview of Bill Dempsey, and he said, Mr. Gay, I'm not the man standing in a phone booth answering want ads. Where are you? I told him, he said, oh, you're only about two blocks from here. Be standing in front of my desk in 10 minutes or never dial this number again. And he hung up. Well, I could have been terribly offended by that and not gone to the meeting, I guess. That would have been another opportunity not to take off. But I was there with about 60 seconds to spare, introduced myself to the receptionist, turned around. There was this curly-headed guy sitting there, and I said, hi, I'm Ben Gay. And he did all the Ben Gay jokes. Oh, Ben Gay, blah, blah, blah. So when he finished, I'm used to those. When he finished, I said, what's your name? And he said, Zig Ziglar. And I said, with a name like Zig Ziglar, you're laughing at Ben Gay? You got to be kidding me. And yes, tremendous help. Yeah, I'm not sure you and I would be talking if my name was Bob Talbert or Ricky Jones or something. Yeah, it was a tremendous help. Cute side story. Zig Ziglar, J. Douglas Edwards, the great sales trainer, and somebody else, I forget who the third one was, they were in my office in San Rafael one day and asked to go to lunch. Dr. Napoleon Hill was there, and he always worked off the end of my desk, which was a big conference table. I said, Dr. Hill, do you want to go? And he said, no, I'm fine. I'm writing and so on. So we went off to lunch. We were gone for 2.5 hours. And when we came back, Dr. Hill said, what was that about? And I said, well, the entire lunch was devoted to getting me to change my name because Ben Gay, the product, back rub, Gay didn't just mean happy anymore. This is the late 60s in California. And it was a distraction and so on. And Dr. Hill, his advice to me was always very short and pointed. He looked up and he said, ignore them. And the subject was never brought up again. And thank goodness I ignored him, because I think you're right. It's a huge help. Yeah, tremendous. When I go on stage, they read a prepared introduction. And the last thing is, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Ben Gay III, and I walk on. And if they did a good job, usually the audience is standing and clapping. The minute they sit down, I say, let's get this Ben Gay thing out of the way. And they always crack up. So it's, most speakers have to have an opening joke, and then you have to change the joke and so on. Well, no one can steal that one from me, so I've been using the same one for 30 years. Well, I liken it to sheepdogs, you know, when you send them out to round up the herd and bring them back. The sheepdogs are much better than they were back then, meaning you can get more prospects in front of you, either on the internet or the phone or face-to-face or whatever. Once the sales encounter has begun, and so I wish I was starting out with all these tools, I'd be the benevolent dictator of the world. My business partner and I, Jimmy Rucker, used to have to drive around, pick up people, take them downtown to the Georgian Terrace Hotel in Atlanta on the corner of Peachtree and Ponce de Leon, as the Yankees say. There was a lot of manpower and time involved. If I could have put up something on the internet and clicked five things and had 25 people show up or get on the phone with me, life would have been a lot simpler. But once the sales process begins, face-to-face, over the phone, over the internet, and so on, selling hasn't really changed since the days of the Yankee peddler, when he was riding around on horseback selling soap or books or whatever. The only slight difference might be, and it doesn't make any difference unless you're a con man, the only slight difference might be that the customer now knows or thinks he or she knows more than they did back then. Yes and no. You don't know the profit margin unless you're the head of General Motors. But you got a much better idea. The problem is, sometimes now, I've never personally sold cars. I have bought and or leased over 600 luxury cars, primarily to give away in contests and so on. So I've had a lot of dealings in the auto industry. The difference today is the customer thinks they know more. They believe they should beat the customer down, I mean, the salesperson down, or the dealership down, to some point where they don't make any money, which A, is silly, and B, leads to bad service. I want everybody to have a fair deal. The last car I bought, I was no longer in the business of buying them 50 at a time and giving them away. I was buying a car for us. And I said to a guy who I befriended, that's always a secret, befriend the salesperson. I said, I want you to make money. I want the dealership to make money, and I don't want to be cheated. What happened to be a GMC, Yukon, XL, Denali. I said, what price would make everybody happy? And he told me, and I said, fine, let's do it. I said, how much did you make? How much did the dealership make? And it was about right. I was happy. I got $10,000 off the sticker price just by driving by and seeing the sign on it. And then with dealership, factory warranty specials and this and that, I wound up getting it for about $17,000 less than if I just walked up with the sticker and wrote a check. But at 17,000 off, they were all happy, and I was happy. There was no haggling. I don't haggle the other way around. If you call me for a product that I sell or a seminar that I sell, or whatever, I give you the good news. It's been pre-haggled. I figured out what I really wanted. I figured out what you'd really offer. And I came together at a figure that ought to make you happy and me happy. And it's this figure. And that's it. And if, you know, I'm smoother than this, but to keep it short on the radio, if that isn't good enough for us, it's a big world. Go find somebody else. Sure, that's part of the sales process, but that's, I teach in seminars, and I'll teach all your folks for free right now. 85% of all the problems in selling go away. First of all, 85% of the problems in selling are self-induced by salespeople trying to outwit the customer and do this and do that and so on. But 85% of all the problems go away in selling if you sell a quality product or service, preferably the best available, at a competitive price. Doesn't have to be the cheapest, but it has to be competitive. You can make up the difference in, for instance, I tell people all the time, you know, what's the difference between this price and that price? So you get me, you can, with a private phone number that you can dial 24 hours a day, 7 days a week if something goes wrong. So that's a difference right there. But competitively priced, and you spend your time talking to qualified prospects. I charge $9,500 for an hour or a full day of seminar work. I don't spend any of that time trying to sell it to a homeless person or the receptionist at some business in the lobby, because the homeless person has no money and the receptionist can only say no. So spending your time talking to qualified people is really crucial. My closing rate, is 86%. I haven't seen the figures for this month, but it's 86%. And people say, well, how can you do that? Well, one, I'm very good at what I do. B, I don't waste any time talking to people that couldn't buy, you know, just could not buy. I'll worry about they're not sure, they want to delay, they procrastinate. That's my job to overcome all that. But I spend zero time talking to people who aren't in a position to buy, don't have the money to buy, don't have the buying authority, zero time. So by the time I say to you, and this is my big fancy close, I've written 12 books on how to close sales, but let me boil it down to you. After we've talked for a while and we've gone over all your concerns, you would hear me say something like, Jim, based on what we've discussed, here's what I recommend we do. You know, two we's in that sentence, by the way, which is all another little secret. Here's what I suggest we do, and then fill in the blank. Get this, don't get this, buy this, go here, whatever. Fair enough? And 86% of the time, it's fair enough. Well, I'll give you one of my great examples of J. Douglas Edwards taught, the great sales trainer. I wrote a book for him called Sales Closing Power after he died from his teachings. The one thing, he taught me many things, but the one thing that comes to my mind every time I think of J. Douglas Edwards is, if you have a built-in objection, bring it up first and brag about it. For instance, I was selling Rolls Royces. I'm picturing British Motors on Van Ness Avenue in San Francisco. And you walked in and I was a salesperson there. I'd come over and greet you. Hi, my name's Ben Gay. Your name, Jim Beach. Jim, nice to meet you, and so on. Jim, one of the joys, I'm so glad to meet you. One of the joys of working here is to getting to meet and work with people who've done well enough or successful enough to invest $350,000 or more in a car. I mean, that's just astounding. So I'm going to want to know a lot about you. When I say the $350,000 in a car, I'm looking at your eyes. If the irises dilate or the blood drains out of your face or you vomit or faint, you're not qualified. If you change, that's a little bit of an exaggeration. But if, on the other hand, you bow and say, well, thank you very much, yes, I am successful and wonderful, then probably, unless it's raining outside and you came in to get dry, probably we're on the right path. If you're selling timeshare or vacation ownership or campground membership, primarily you're talking to people who are at the resort. So we already know they vacation. We already know they're spending money to vacation. Our job is to show them a better way to do that. So it's really in the little ad I answered in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution said, if you want to know, if you want to make more money and know anything about marketing plans, dial this number. Well, I was putting a wife through nursing school and I was making $100 a week in 1965 dollars, making $100 a week. All I needed was qualification was if you want to make more money, I was in. I didn't know what a marketing plan was, but I figured we'd cross that bridge when we came to it. So a lot of it is where you meet them, how you meet them, referrals, et cetera. For instance, Jim, I haven't run an ad for the closer's material or my seminars or anything else in 25 years. I was good enough at it, been at it long enough, and the reputation of me and my materials, the closer series, has gotten to the point that all I have to do to prospect is answer the phone when it rings and check my emails. Apparently not much. In both cases, first of all, I am pro grip, learning how to properly present something. I made $0 the first 6 months I was in multi-level marketing. Zero, because I wouldn't learn the scripts. I thought a smile and a handshake would do it, and I wasn't concerned about a better way to do it and so on until I arrived one night at the meeting at the Georgian Terrace Hotel and Bill Dempsey met me at the door and said, Ben, I need to talk to you. And the long and short of the conversation was he didn't want me coming back to the meetings anymore because I didn't bring anybody. I was of no help. I didn't know the closing script, the presentation script, the invitation. The reason I didn't have anybody with me, I didn't know the invitation script, et cetera. So I am pro script. And I solved that problem, by the way, 8 or 10 days later, standing in front of his desk, giving him all the material he asked for word. And that's that night I started making money. I made more that night, first night after I'd learned the scripts and was allowed to come back to the meetings. I made more that night than I made in a year working for my father. So I'm a big believer in scripts. However, when I teach scripts, I say, but you must listen. It was said of Nelson Mandela that he was a dynamic listener, known for speaking, but a dynamic listener. So when you're running through your script, your pre-prepared presentation, I don't mean go A to Z no matter what they say or do. You must listen carefully and find out what their objections, concerns, et cetera, are. Now, I can explain away, I can't explain the way the timeshare guy, because he or she was an idiot. I got that. But the window person, let me cover it. And at timeshare, they're used to the people who came just to get the show tickets or the free television or what have you. That's part of the game. So they should be prepared for that to work around it. In the case of the lady who called on you with the windows, what she was trying to avoid and had been told to avoid is a one-legged presentation. Because if both people aren't there, in most cases, it does require both people. And if the lady, if Mrs. Beach isn't happy, you're not buying any windows. But the other thing is, if you are Mr. Beach and Mrs. Beach isn't there, then your automatic out is, I have to check with my wife. They want the wife sitting there so you don't have to check with her because she heard the same presentation you did. That's the justification for it. But there are exceptions to the rule. You reminded me, you said you want to call the police. I do work for a vacuum cleaner company. I'll leave it unnamed for the moment. And they say the presentation isn't over until you've been paid or the police have been called. So now I didn't teach them that, and I don't agree with it. I've been fighting them 20 some odd years over it, but that's their attitude towards it. But they see, I can do all that to you, Jim. And Cabot Robert, the great speaker, now deceased, founder of the National Speakers Association, along with 11 other of us, used to say of me, probably said it to other people, but I remember it because he said it of me. He said, Ben Gay can tell you to go to hell and have you looking forward to the trip. So by the time I finished with you, you would have convinced me you really could make a buying decision on windows without any on the spot, without any other input from anybody, or Mrs. Beach would be sitting on the sofa behind you. We would have to be both convinced of both things, because the odds are just overwhelming in that business. First of all, it's a one call close. As in timeshare, there are very few B-backs that actually happen. There are just enough B-backs in both businesses to convince amateur salespeople that it's okay not to close. You know, it's like when you play golf. Every round I've ever played, no matter how bad it was, there's always one shot that brings me back next weekend. We love seeing things piled out in front of houses, free, an ugly sofa, and so on. And we always laugh and say, he must have just gotten married. And she... Right, exactly. Well, my father saw me sitting on the sofa one too many times in the summer and suggested I get a job. And I came up with stories about that. And he said, well, get the lawnmower out of the basement, start mowing lawns. Well, this is probably July in Atlanta. And I mowed one lawn and decided manual labor was not for me. He then taught me a sales lesson. He said, go up, tell them you'll mow the lawn, and they can set their own price after you're done. And I said, well, what if they don't pay me enough? He said, they'll pay you more than you would ever dare to ask. So I did that, and sure enough, it was right, but it was still hot. So I came back and I said, they're paying more, but I don't like doing it. And he said, get your friends to do it. You do the selling, they do the mowing, you do the inspecting and collecting. I said, how am I going to pay him? He said, you're already getting paid twice what you were asking. Give them half of it, which will be twice what they would ask, and they couldn't ask anything because they don't have the nerve to knock on the door and ask. So I did, and pretty quickly in the growing season for a few years there, I had 20, 25 kids working for me, and I was making as much or more money than many of the adults on East Lake Drive. No, never. Well, here's what they do. Here's what they do. If they're in selling or know someone who is and want to be nice to them, what they want is the closers series of sales training books, what's called in the industry the famous blue books. They happen to be blue. So rather than go to my website and sign up, we'll send you stuff about where I'm going to be and so on. But to buy, I have a site for you that is less expensive than I sell them. And that is at, get your pencils ready, stores, S-T-O-R-E-S dot eBay. .com/Ronzoni Books, all one word, RONZONEBOOKS. If they go there, there's currently a special that features special pricing and free shipping. I offer neither at my website. So that's the place to go. Still comes with an unconditional lifetime money back guarantee. And I still sign and date every copy that leaves this book.
All right. Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us. And congratulations on an amazing career. We're out of time for today. Bye, everybody. Go make $1 million.